Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk with your host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Ryan Dobson here with our physician in residence, Dr. Meg Meeker. And Dr. Meeker, last time we enjoyed the first part of a conversation between my dad, Dr. James Dobson, and a couple that I really admire so much, Tobin and Joanne Heim, on the topic of merging premarital expectations.
We did, Ryan, and I loved what they had to say about preparing for that first year of marriage. As we mentioned before on the program, we're here to help marriages thrive. Unfortunately, in our culture today, people focus far too much on the wedding ceremony and the wedding night without giving nearly enough attention to the months and years that follow the wedding. So it's no wonder that the divorce rate continues to climb if couples don't take the time to focus on laying the proper foundation for marriage. There's a statistically high chance that their marriage will fail.
Oh, unfortunately, that's true. And that's why we're committing another day to helping couples set themselves up for success before the wedding day. Today, we're going to hear part two of a program titled Merging Premarital Expectations. But before we roll into the show, I want to introduce the Heims and give a brief update on their family. Tobin and Joanne have been married for over 20 years. They have two daughters. Tobin's worked with me for many years as the executive producer and co-host of my old broadcast, Grounded. We co-authored a book together, and he and his wife, Joanne, are both writers, heavy bloggers, and speakers, and they've co-written a book on today's topic titled Happily Ever After, A Real Life Look at Your First Year of Marriage and Beyond. And I mentioned yesterday that 2 years ago, Joanne suffered a massive stroke while jogging on the treadmill one morning. And their family really is going through a tough time. And I'm sure even their premarital expectations that were cohesive didn't include this. And that's why we continue to keep them in our prayers that Joanne will have a full recovery of these injuries.
Mm-hmm. Here now is Tobin and Joanne Heim with Dr. James Dobson on this edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Well, Tobin and Joanne, you told us last time that you went through some real struggles in the first year or two of your marriage. You had to learn what it means to be married, how to be committed to one another. Were finances one of those concerns?
Oh, yes.
Finances might have been the largest concern. You know, really? Joanne and I sort of had this false expectation getting married that we would be able to live at the economic level that our parents had lived, which made no sense.
We were in college.
We went to college.
Right. We had no money.
Dad had a great job. My dad had a great job. We didn't have any money whatsoever, and yet we expected that we were going to have the new car, and we were going to get the new clothes, and we were going to take vacations, because that's the environment we had grown up in. The only way to do that when you don't have money is to use a credit card. And we racked up, I think, during those last couple of years of college, somewhere around $18,000 worth of credit card debt, because we were bound and determined that we were going to live
at
this lifestyle.
At 18% interest or more.
At 18% interest. It was painful.
Yeah. It was very painful.
Did anybody tell you that had to be paid back?
We knew that it had to be paid back. And I think we both felt very isolated because of that. Since then, we've talked to so many people who struggled with the same sort of financial issues with debt and how do we budget and how do we work this out together. But there's a lot of shame involved in being that much in debt. My parents had always told me, you never, ever borrow money for anything except a house. I knew that this is how they felt. And so I felt incredibly ashamed that we had this problem. And it felt like something we had to work out on our own.
What kind of things did you buy early on that you should have waited for?
Food. We went out to eat. I mean, there was even nothing to show for it. You get this bill and you're looking at restaurant charges and there's nothing tangible for it.
Restaurant charges and lots of clothes. And we would take weekend trips over to Seattle. That's across the state from where we went to college. And really, like Joanne said, things that just didn't have any lasting value.
Did you buy furniture?
No. Our apartment wasn't big enough for furniture.
our parents are very graciously kind of taking care of a lot of that and give us some odds and ends from around the house. So we
how much money did you have when you got married, Tobin?
Not much. A
couple thousand dollars,
maybe. Couple of thousand dollars.
We didn't have any financial problems at all because we didn't have any finances. $100 between us to last for 6 weeks until we got our first teaching checks. And we ate hot dogs, and I mean, it was pretty tough that first month. Mm-hmm. And then we both got a paycheck, and we were on our own pretty much. But you can now, when you begin to get in a hole, start to get angry about that, can't you?
Oh, sure. And it becomes a real issue of contention in the marriage. I had a lot of sleepless nights thinking about how are we ever going to pay this off? even when we got out of college and got good jobs, we had dug ourselves so far into a hole that we were sort of behind our peers in terms of what we could do or how we could spend or you know, they would be going off on vacations or going skiing for the weekend and we would want to go with them, and we just weren't in a position to do that because we were saddled with this debt.
Part of the thing is Tobin has different spending patterns than I do. I tend to be a little bit more tight-fisted than he is.
Did you fuss with each other about it?
We had problems.
Or blame each other for this debt?
Tobin tried to keep debt from me. One of the patterns in our conflict is if he thought I was feeling upset or angry, he would buy me a present to make me feel better. And while presents are nice, financed at 18%, they're really not worth it.
And that goes back to a family history issue that we talked about last time, that had been my experience, that in my family, a lot of times when we would fuss at each other or when there was a problem, we would use money sometimes to solve that. You know, my dad would work a lot, and so sometimes I would get a new bike out of the deal. You know, that was just kind of a pattern that was developed. And so for me, when Joanne and I would be in conflict, it was very natural. It felt very natural to grab that credit card and go out and buy her something nice, expecting that to resolve the issue.
Which made me angry.
It compounded the issue, and that was a huge clash of family histories, of family cultures that came to play there.
So much of what you write about in this book deals with family history, what you bring into the relationship. Is largely dependent on what you've seen at home.
Right. It's huge. Yeah.
And even if what you've seen is great, it's different than what your spouse has seen. And there's a tendency to feel like my way is the right way. Yeah. And sometimes those patterns aren't very healthy. And even if you know better, when the going gets tough, you go with what you know. And so it can be very difficult to break some of those patterns that you don't want to continue.
Well, your book is designed to help people avoid these pitfalls. What are you going to tell them about money? If you ain't got it, don't spend it.
That's
How's that?
Right.
If you ain't got it, don't spend it. Budget, 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 and then live within your budget.
And talk about it. Yeah. You know, one of the things that we do in the book to help couples is at the end of every chapter, we have lists of questions. And I think one of the questions in the money chapter is, how much do you spend on Christmas presents? It seems something really small, but that's related to money. It's related to how you grew up. You know, it's little things like that that come into play.
Well, you've taken us into holidays. That's another source of conflict. Many couples get married and they have not answered the question, where are we going to spend Thanksgiving? That's a very practical thing. You can answer that one in advance.
When we first got married and were in college, I think we spent our first Thanksgiving just us because we lived so far away from our families. In future years, our parents lived down the street together, and on those years when we didn't spend Thanksgiving with everybody together, you do dinner at one house and dessert at the other, and that never works because you end up eating two complete Thanksgiving dinners.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it can be a hard one to figure out.
Did you all fight over this?
I don't think it was so much of a fight. It just took a lot of orchestration in terms of dealing with details.
And you don't want to let anybody down. You know, you love your parents and you love your families and you love your remembrances of Thanksgivings and Christmases, and you want to be a part of that. And the idea that, boy, I might not be able to be there for that special dinner, I may not be able to be there for that special breakfast, there's disappointment that can go on between a couple. And at the same time, you're wanting to honor your spouse's memories and experiences. And so it's a challenge and requires quite a bit of communications ability to really work that through.
You can't be all things to all people on any particular day, but you can balance it.
That's right.
Of all the sources of conflict, this was the most difficult. And I'm not referring simply to holidays. I'm referring to my parents and how we were going to relate to them, and Shirley's parents, and my folks lived right near us, 5 miles away. And I'm an only child, and I was kind of the center of the universe for my parents. And then we get married all of a sudden, and my parents expect us to continue. You know, they expect, for one thing, my mother liked to cook Sunday dinner and expected us to be there every Sunday for the meal. And that's fine. We did that. But there are times when Shirley said, I don't want to always go there. I want to do other things. I want to go to a restaurant. I don't always want. And I couldn't say no to my parents, which was my fault. I should have been able to sit down with my parents and say, and you know, let's pick a couple of Sundays a month and you tell us which ones you'd rather have. I couldn't say that. And so I would get in a crossfire, and my mother would call, and I'm on the phone, and Shirley's huffing and puffing behind me. And frankly, it was my fault, because I should have confronted the deal, and I could not reject my parents.
It was very helpful for us to live far away from both sets of our families after we got married, because boundaries can be hard to set. Just like you said, it was hard for you to say no to your parents and to put that boundary in place.
Very difficult.
It's very difficult. Now, when you live 1,500 miles away, it's a little bit easier. In the meantime, if you live close by, boundaries are the answer, and it's hard and it can be awkward, but it's something that must be done.
Tobin, you have talked in this book about Joanne's so-called meta messages.
The concept of meta messages is that I say something and I have an intention that goes along with that. Joanne hears it, and the way she interprets that intention is completely other than how I had intended it. A great example, I could say, "Boy, Joanne, I really like that other dress better than the one you have on right now. Oh, you hate this dress.
I look fat."
You don't look fat. I don't hate that dress. I just like the other dress better. But meta message is such a tricky deal, because there's a trust component that as the listener, and I've done it too, as the listener, you have to be willing to take that person's comments at face value. A lot of times we read in body language and we read in tone and we read in all of these other things that make me think what she said, she can't possibly have meant the way she probably intended to me. She meant something completely other, and I'm going to take offense at what she was really trying to say, that message underneath the words that she delivered. And getting beyond that to say, you know what, we're going to take each other at face value.
And we have a responsibility to speak the truth.
Yeah.
And to say what we mean and not play games.
I talked about a momentary fuss that Shirley and I had where she said, "If this is marriage, I don't want any part of it." She did not mean that. There's a better message. What she really meant is, "I am extremely frustrated right now."
That's right. Mm-hmm.
That's all she meant by it.
Yep.
And if I had taken literally what she said, I could have been wounded for the rest of my life by it.
You know? That's right.
It's hard, I think, sometimes in the midst of conflict, especially conflict about stupid things, which you feel shouldn't be making you so angry, but they are, to remember that you really love this person. Yeah. And for me, when I tend to meta message, I need to stop and remember that Tobin really values me and he loves me. And at the same time, when I get in the heat of an argument, I need to remember the good things about him. I need to think about what's true about him and what's lovely about him and what's good in him.
The Bible says not to let the sun go down on your wrath. Mm. Do you all practice that?
Yes.
Yes. Because like you said last time we talked, getting into bed, and when we got married, we had a very small double bed, and turning your back on somebody and maintaining that stony silence, it's
awful.
Uncomfortable. It's just terrible.
Let me ask you all to do something fun. I don't know if you've ever been asked this before. Let's suppose by some magic, I could bring here to this table today the people you used to be. Mm. Let's suppose we will tap in 3 months before your wedding, and they're going to sit here and you're going to talk to you. You're going to give advice to you. You're going to tell you what you don't know at this stage of marriage. Mm-hmm. Let's kind of role play that a little bit. What are you going to say? Joanne, what are you going to say to Joanne?
I think I would tell myself to give it time. I expected that being married would transform me somehow in the space of the time it took me to say I do. And we're all in process, and I don't think I realized that. I think I knew it in my head, but I didn't really believe it. And I wish that I would have looked forward into the future more to have realized that this is a process, and marriage isn't just a state of being. It's a process of learning how to do it.
Let me be Joanne the first, okay? You be Joanne the second.
Okay.
You be today, and I will be yesterday, okay? Joanne, I don't understand what you're telling me. I love this man enough to die for him. I mean, I would. I really do. Care that much about him. He's everything I wanted in a husband. And I can't wait to spend my life with him. And you're telling me that I'm sailing into rough waters? I don't see it. I don't believe it.
You know, it's unrealistic to expect that everything's going to be perfect. I change my mind from day to day. Fickle. And I just think, you know, you need to look long term. Things are going to change. Circumstances that are beyond our control are going to come up. And I would say, too, remember that feeling of being so excited to get married, you can hardly sit still. Mm-hmm. And that just amazing feeling of being so overwhelmingly in love. I mean, just hang on to that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Tobin, it's your turn.
Gosh, I think the big thing I would tell myself is stay conscious of the fact that you're going to be married for a long, long, long time.
Forever.
Mm-hmm. And that you don't have to fix everything today. You don't have to put heat on all of these issues, all of these imperfections that you can identify in yourself, in Joanne, in your marriage, and try to resolve those immediately. Because like Joanne said, it's a process.
Okay, I'm Tobin one now.
Sure.
And
hit me.
I don't get it. I don't know what you're talking about. I've been with this woman, we've been dating for how many years? 3 years mm-hmm, now? Mm-hmm. I know her. There's nothing hidden from me. I know who she is. I've seen her depressed. I've seen her up. I've seen her confused. I've seen her in difficult moments. And I am absolutely committed to her. What are you
talking? I would have to say, Tobin, trust me, there are dynamics that emerge in marriage that simply do not emerge in a dating or engaged relationship. And when those things come about, you're going to be taken by surprise. And if your deep desire is to try to fix them right now, you're going to create more turmoil and more trouble than if you enter into a process of getting those things worked through.
Well, Tobin, too, should I get married?
Absolutely.
I mean, you're
it's
talking about a lot of difficulty here. Why do I want to impose that on myself?
You know, one of the things that Joanne and I talk about that's an analogy that's really worked well for us is that every person, when they enter into marriage, starts out as a square paving stone. And God's purpose for us in marriage is to make us a round paving stone. Mm-hmm. And in the first year of marriage, that's when the corners get knocked off. There's refinement that happens throughout the lifetime of our marriage. But those big pieces end up getting chipped away in that first 12 months, sometimes first 18 months. If you really desire to be the person that God intends for you to be, and if you feel like God has called you to marriage, then you have to acknowledge that God has called you to some form of transformation and that he's going to use your spouse in that capacity of transformation.
You mean
and
I got to do a bunch of changing?
Yep. You really do.
I do?
Yeah, just fold the towels differently.
I like who I am. I like what I am. I don't want to go, you know, have all the corners knocked off me. I like those corners.
Then you're going to face some challenges. Then you're going to face some challenges because God loves you so much that he's not going to allow you to be that same person.
Mm. I don't know if you talked about this in the book or not. Did you discuss power games? Did you discuss the establishment of a lifelong pattern the first year of your marriage as to who gives in, who wins, who makes the major decisions, how power is distributed, and what the areas of dominance are for each of you? Did you discuss that?
I don't think exactly in those terms. When I hear you talk about who gives in and who perseveres and that kind of thing, that makes me think again of conflict and the pattern that you grew up with, what you're used to. My tendency is to go, okay, fine, whatever you want, even if I'm not on board.
This is a really big one. I mean, it is very important because if a husband holds all the power, and I believe in masculine leadership, the Bible teaches it, and I believe it, but if he holds all the power and his wife yields completely at every point and is more or less dominated by her, that's not healthy.
I think one
on the other hand, you know, a woman can make a milquetoast out of a man. It can work both ways, and establishing that balance of power is really critical.
I think one of the things that we do talk a little bit about in the book is the concept of consensus, and there are certain points at which you just won't be able to reach consensus, and you need to have a mechanism in place to get those decisions made. For Joanne and I, we try to build as much consensus on big issues as possible. I've gotten job offers to move away. Joanne's family is here. We love to be in town. And yet, after we've tried to build some consensus, Joanne, almost without failing, has gotten to the point of saying, but this is a decision that you will have to make because of your role in this family. And so we seek to build that consensus, but yet we know there are certain times when decisions are going to come up that just talking about it isn't going to solve it. And I feel really empowered as Joanne's husband to make those decisions for us. And that's a permission that she's given me.
And I feel comfortable letting him make those decisions because it's not like he walks in the door one day and says, oh, I had a job offer and we're going to move to Washington, D.C. next month. Yeah.
It's doesn't take your feelings into consideration.
Right. It's something that we talk about. And as we have faced big decisions like that, which usually for us have been about moving somewhere, we have prayed that God would make us like-minded. Yes. Mm. And at the same time, knowing that I'm going to trust that God's in control and Tobin's going to make the right decision. And even if I don't feel really okay about it, if I feel sad or whatever, I'm going to go with what he says because he's my husband.
And the encouragement to young couples out there is that as we've prayed that, God has never failed to answer that prayer. Almost every time we've had to make a decision like that, God has brought us to a like-mindedness.
After 10 years, you can recommend this wonderful thing called marriage to those who are not yet there.
Oh, it's the greatest.
Without question.
Yeah. We love being married, and it's so much fun. And there are challenges, but they help you grow and change, and it's exciting.
You've done a good work. Thanks for being our guest. I know that our listeners have enjoyed it, and let's talk again.
Thanks,
Dr. Dobson.
Well, you've been listening to part two of a program called Merging Premarital Expectations here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Dr. Meg Meeker, along with fellow co-host Ryan Dobson. And Ryan, I can't think of a more important program for any couple out there who's preparing to get married.
I totally agree. A lot of what the Himes talk about has to do with some of the fundamental and deep stuff that couples need to agree on before they get married. But the other aspect of Tobin and Joanne's advice that I really like is the fact that they talk about some of the smaller, less significant issues as well. For example, the other day I was at home, and I can't believe I'm going to admit this on air, but Laura and I got into an argument over dishes. Really, I'm not sure why. And at one point I said that at least 80% of the time that she does the dishes, I have to pull them out of the dishwasher and rewash them because they weren't totally washed for the first time.
Ryan Dobson,
yeah.
You did not.
Yeah, I've been married for 8 years. I haven't learned that one yet. And it hurt her feelings. And she said, well, is there another way you could say that? And I said, I don't know. And I thought about it for a while. And I came back and I said, well, how about this? Honey, 20% of the time that you do the dishes, they're 100% perfect.
Not bad for thinking on your feet there,
well,
Ryan.
Well, at least we laughed about it. And I'm learning from my mistakes. I can't believe I said all those things, but I did. And it just goes to illustrate the point that you mentioned in part one of the program. Sometimes in marriage, even the smallest disagreements can turn into monsters if given space. I've been married to Laura for 8.5 years now, and yet we're still learning how to live with each other.
Yeah, that's why it's so important to start marriage off right. And if you know someone who is getting ready to get married or who is still in that honeymoon stage of their marriage, pick up a copy of the Himes book, Happily Ever After, a real-life look at your first year of marriage and beyond. You can pick up a copy by visiting our website, drjamesdobson.org, or by calling us at 877-732-6825. You can also visit our Facebook page, Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, or through our mobile app. I still can't believe you said that, Ryan.
I know, but that's how marriage works sometimes. Thank you all for joining us today, and we look forward to seeing you again next time right here for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.
Can you imagine a world where society looked down on parents and raising children? So much so that couples with kids simply became known as breeders. Or what if the sick and aging were seen solely as economic drains and treated that way? I'm Ryan Dobson for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, and that's the chilling premise of my dad's new trilogy of books written with Kurt Bruner. Books 1 and 2, Fatherless and Childless, are available now. And considering the current trends, these books could be a picture of our society's future. They're page-turners that will also make you think. And while they're fiction, this series also challenges us to take a closer look at the values of modern culture and the forces at work today that might tear families apart tomorrow. Intrigued? Then look for copies of both Fatherless and the eagerly awaited follow-up Childless at drjamesdobson.org. That's drjamesdobson.org.
Hello, everyone. I'm James Dobson. For those of you who enjoy our radio program, Family Talk, I have some good news. When you're not able to hear Family Talk right here on your favorite Christian radio station, you can catch us 24 hours a day by downloading the new and free Family Talk mobile app. Visit your app marketplace to download it today. And thanks for listening to Family Talk.